Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
What is up? Welcome back to Tomahawked. I am your host, Rob Fox, joined as always by Dan Holloway. We're here to talk some Braves baseball, and we're almost matching today.
Yeah, almost.
I should have brought my hat, the one that didn't fit your head.
Yeah, you've got a big noodle. So I did it with, I actually bought two of these as well because I wasn't sure of the size. I don't know, for some reason the sizes are inconsistent on some of these products, but I bought a large and an XL. The XL was too big, so I gave it to Ross. You got fucked on that one. If the XL had fit me, I would have given you the large. Fuck. And you would have had the full setup.
God damn it, Nike.
Is it Nike?
I would assume so. Fucking I think it is. They're just like stealing all the MLB.
Oh yeah, there we go.
Yeah. They're stealing all the MLB stuff.
These things are really nice too. I like these. I mean, you can tell. You can really feel the slave labor in them.
It's top tier stuff. Yeah. Like, you know, Adidas. They're just not doing it right.
No. They don't. They need more slaves. I've said that forever.
Yep. I agree. Got some stuff to talk about today. Obviously, look, there's only one thing to really talk about right now, and that's Spencer Strider.
Yeah, I mean, he's a pretty good baseball player. Pitcher, I believe he plays.
Yes, he is a thrower.
I think he throws baseballs,
as they say in the baseball league. Spencer Strider was, what, 3 innings from a perfect game and about 1.1 innings from a no-hitter?
Yeah, it's funny, the same pitch that he spoiled, Gene Segura in the eighth inning, hit kind of a bloop single off a low and away slider, almost the same pitch in the same location from Charlie yesterday in the sixth inning. I think he grounded out to second base, was I think what Strider was looking for.
Yeah.
Or just a strikeout. Gene Segura, you don't strike out very much. He's one of the hardest people in baseball to strike out. So, you know, in hindsight, the kid is a perfectionist. I heard Glavin talking about it last night at some point during the broadcast about how he was like, yeah, that was a good game. I was just like kind of focused on a couple of mistakes that I can correct. Like that's a fucking winner right there.
That's what you want to hear.
Which is funny because he's from Gen Z and a total, pardon the phrase, but a total libtard, right? Not that I care. I mean, like conservative people would fucking look at his social media probably and be like, oh, this guy's fucking libtard.
Right.
But he is a goddamn animal out there. Yeah. I don't give a fuck what he believes. He could be a fucking devil worshiper. As long as he keeps fucking striking people out, I'm good.
I mean, he is I love how competitive he is. And that is the type of thing, too, where you see it from some dudes who are also that competitive, but they just kind of let it fly and they rely on their athleticism and their God-given talent. Or they rely on that and then they don't develop their work ethic. They sometimes develop the work ethic, but it's not till a little later.
Yeah.
He has clearly had that work ethic for a long, long time. And actually, here's a good comp. There's a great article on Max Scherzer from years ago, probably like 6 or 7 years ago. I think it was either ESPN or Sports Illustrated. And it was kind of a human interest piece / baseball piece on him, on Scherzer. So, it all centered kind of around his Scherzer's brother like killed himself at some point while Scherzer was, I think, in the minors.
He came up with the Tigers, right?
D-backs.
Oh, he came up with the D-backs. Yeah. Okay.
So while Scherzer was at Mizzou, he was a really highly touted player there as well, right? Like he was a high draft pick and all that stuff. While he was at Mizzou, his brother, who, you know, he grew up with in St. Louis, obviously a huge baseball fan, but obviously, you know, not Max, right? Not going to play. But he was a huge baseball fan, I guess more in the way I am. Like, he was really into analytics and stats and read Moneyball and all that stuff like that. And he got Max in college, I think it was in college, really hooked on all that type of shit, like spin rate, all types of, like, the analytics on when you should throw what pitch when, you know, like all that type of stuff. Not just, like, pitching with feel or pitching with scout, but also using numbers. And Scherzer credited – Scherzer was already not necessarily a Hall of Famer at that point, but a multiple-time Cy Young winner at that point. And Scherzer was like, I wouldn't be where I am without having started to understood this stuff earlier. And I think there's a lot of players who might they have to look at it because the team puts it in front of them now, sure, yeah. But they don't necessarily get super into that type of stuff in like and or into the scout, into the tapes until a little bit later. And it's clear that Spencer has that sort of like not just the jock work ethic of working out, locating, having good sessions, but the sort of nerd work ethic of studying, doing what is obviously the more boring part of things.
Yeah, but he's a fucking nerd, right? I mean, you should expect that. He's got Nolan's arm and Maddox's fucking brain, it seems like, which is going to be dangerous for the league.
I hope so. That just made me pretty horny.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's on pace for 370 strikeouts this year.
Right, and the record, like, it's Nolan's, well, the modern record is like 383.
383, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. 383, and I think Nolan had 370-something once, and then Koufax is 382, but nobody else has gone above, like, the low to mid threes, really. So he's got a shot to have a really historic season right now. But it's, even from the beginning, from his first couple of starts of this season, which were not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, every one of his starts, he's struck out at least 9 people. So he hasn't had a bad start. I think he got dinged up a little bit in one of them. But you can see a couple of things progressing right now. One, he's attacking the zone more with 2 strikes, especially instead mm-hmm. of wasting pitches. Or maybe his purpose pitches are closer to the zone to elicit more swings instead of just like being a show me pitch.
Because he would a lot of times, whether it was the slider or the fastball, I just kind of remember like, when he threw it high, it was high.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it was like, come on, like, you're not fooling anybody with that. Like,
I mean, if it's at your eyes, you're not going to swing at it. If it's at your shoulders, you might, right? If it's at your titties, you're definitely going to swing at it. So he's doing a much better job at that. He's doing a much better job of getting ahead in counts. I mean, just fucking painting the black 98 is, who's going to hit that?
There's nothing.
He's not going to hit it. So he's 23, 24. How old is he?
Strider is 24. And a half.
Okay. Well, good luck. I mean, if this kid stays healthy, he's got a good shot. There's a couple of records that are completely unbreakable. Like, nobody's going to beat Nolan's strikeout, all-time strikeout record, because you're just not going to throw that many innings over the course of your career.
You would have to be like Strider and somehow, like, average 5 innings and 10 strikeouts, which was kind of his MO last year, and then also pitch till you're, like, 45.
Yeah. And also have started. I mean, Nolan technically started at 19. He didn't pitch all that much. He was mostly a reliever. I think he threw like 40 innings or 50 innings in his first season.
People forget he was on the Miracle Mets of 69.
Yeah, and then at 70 during spring training, he fucking snapped. Or no, 68. So before that, he tore his forearm ligament.
Mm-hmm.
And he had come back from that. So technically, he could have started at 18, to be honest. But he didn't really start getting great until he moved to California.
Yeah, he didn't do much on the Mets that first go-around.
Yes, so I guess maybe, but still putting up numbers. I mean, still striking out 150 or so a year, which is, you know, it adds to your total. But, nobody's going to catch that one, but there is one that I think Strider can catch, and it's the most seasons with 300 or more strikeouts. That's 6 right now by Nolan. I think he could do that one if he stays healthy, because he's probably going to strike out 250 plus in just a generic year.
Right.
So anytime he has a good year over the next 10 years or so, he's got an outside shot at that one. That would be interesting to see that.
And again, because
the only person that's even close is Randy Johnson. He's got 4.
Yeah. And given the era, right?
Yeah.
Like that's the fact that people do swing and miss more now and stuff like that. And so here's what's still crazy to me. I mean, look, Strider right now, he's already 1.3 wins above replacement. Which puts him in the top 5 in wins above replacement for Fangraphs. 14.7 strikeouts per 9 innings, which is obscene.
It's pretty wild.
Only a .245 batting average on balls in play against him. So, you know, he's eliciting good contact, luck, but he's eliciting good or bad contact, I guess you could say. But what's still interesting to me is that it just doesn't he still seem like so raw, like it he doesn't he still doesn't seem polished.
No, he's putting the physical stuff together. So the instinct to attack the zone, the instinct to get ahead in counts early in the game and try to be economical and stuff like that is starting to come to him now. But the approach, still, like learning the hitters, learning their weaknesses and attacking their weaknesses on a regular basis, I still don't see him doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, for all things being equal, for a pitcher of his talent, his natural talent especially, you might not expect that to come, as you said, until like the late 20s or early 30s when his, you know, he starts to fucking slow down a little bit. But it's not the kind of guy he is. So I expect even throughout this season that he's going to continue to progress and start to – once he feels comfortable with the mechanical adjustments he's made, I don't know if you've noticed, but he's got a bit – an even wider stance now for his initial delivery.
Yeah.
I don't know what the purpose of that was. Maybe it's to stay closed longer or something. He feels like he's dragging the ball or letting his front side get ahead of him, and that's why that fastball's going a little higher than he wants it.
Yeah.
On those pitches. Who knows, right? I'm just speculating. But once he feels comfortable in this stuff, a brain like his, he's going to start trying to figure some other shit out too.
And what's interesting, I've noticed the last couple starts of his, particularly the start where he almost had the no-hitter, he is still obviously throwing gas, but like I'm seeing more 96s, right? Like last year, it was all 98, 99, 100, 101 a couple times. But I was seeing more like 95, 96, 97.
Yeah.
And that tells me like he obviously hasn't lost velocity.
No, he definitely hasn't. But
right. But so what that tells me he's trying to pitch more in control. I mean, even,
well, maybe in control and maybe to show the hitter a little bit different look too.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, he doesn't throw anything two seam. It's all four seam fastballs. So, if you can throw a four seam fastball at 98 and another one at 94, that doesn't sound like that much, but that's the difference between hitting the barrel sometimes and hitting off the end of the bat of the label or missing entirely, right? Or weak, just generating weak contact in general. Maddux used to do that shit all the time. Maddux had three pitches. He threw a sinker. Well, actually, he threw a sinker cutter. It just depended on which finger he put pressure on. There's a video of him on YouTube somewhere explaining how, instead of the way guys do it now, I don't have a baseball here, but instead of a closed finger sinker like this, where you're on one of the seams and you're just riding the ball down so it fucking, you know, kind of makes that movement one way or the cutter where you're kind of on the side of it a little bit and throwing it that way. He used a regular two-seam fastball grip and used the pressure on his fingers. Now, I don't know if he could replicate that. That dude's an alien.
Right.
But he threw those two pitches, a kind of get-me-over curveball and the best changeup we've probably ever seen.
Yeah.
But he threw his fastball, both the cutter and the sinker, at two different speeds. So technically that's four pitches, five and six. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? For a guy that knew how to use them.
I mean, he was the type of guy. Well, and the reason I mentioned him throwing Strider, you know, dropping down to 96 or whatever, 95, is that is something I remember Maddux doing quite a bit, right? Like, so Maddux technically had the velocity to throw like 92, 93, but he always threw 88 to 90, and then sometimes you would see that fastball in there at 86. Because, because I think a lot of people, without knowing that pitcher, having seen that pitcher, would think changing speeds just means he was switching between his fastball and his changeup. But that wasn't it.
Yeah.
He would just throw it a little easier and then mix, like you said, the pressure on the fingers, and then also throw the changeup to mix the speed and the look and the movement even more. And so I saw that from Strider, and I was just like he's putting together a full repertoire right now without, by the way, having actually added a pitch.
Yeah.
So his numbers between 2022 and 2023 for pitch type are identical in terms of he's only throwing three pitches and he's really only throwing two pitches, right?
Right, yeah.
So in 2022, Strider threw the fastball 67% of the time. In 2023, he's thrown it 60% of the time. The slider is the other one. Threw it 28% of the time. Last year, he's thrown it 35% of the time this year. So he clearly, A, has more confidence in the slider. B, they're probably telling him to throw it more.
Yeah.
It's not just like a switch. You know, it's funny that the pitcher whose repertoire I find the most similar to Strider's is prime Craig Kimbrel. Because it's the same thing, right? It's a fucking 99-mile-an-hour fastball and then just a filthy... I think Kimbrel's was technically a curve, but it just looked like a slider. But I think Strider's is a slider. But then, and then the changeup is... he's thrown it a little less this year, actually, 4.3% of the time instead of 4.8. But you didn't see him experiment or like vary speed on the fastball that much last year. It was always just letting it fucking rip.
Yeah, it's interesting. The variable speed, the real benefit of of that. And Charlie Morton does it with his curveball too. Every now and again, he'll lollipop one in there instead of having a sharp breaker. Even when you know that that pitch is coming, you can't necessarily sit on a speed. That's, I think that's the real benefit. But, you know, the biggest, this is the best, this is obviously the best game he's ever pitched. I don't think anybody could debate that. 101 pitches, 81 strikes.
It's insane.
That's pretty incredible.
And I mean, he wasn't hunting for swings out of the zone. He was just peppering the strike zone.
Yeah, I wonder. I haven't looked. I'm sure somebody's got a breakdown of this, but I wonder how many of the strikeouts were in the zone versus out of the zone. I know there was a couple of sliders low and away that he got people on.
I want to say they were all swinging strikeouts at one point. That might not have been the case by the end of the game, but I think when he had gotten around 10, because he had 13 that game, maybe. I think when he had gotten his 10th, what's-his-face, the new announcer, had noted that they were all swinging strikes or swinging strikeouts. And then, ironically, Segura swings at a sort of strikeout waste pitch in the dirt, basically. I mean, that was like an obvious ball that he just tracked with his bat, like of all the pitches to lose a no-hitter on.
Yeah.
But, man, that, again, Strider's mental work ethic is so exciting, and the fact that he is a nerd, like he presents like a jock, you know what I mean? He presents just like a wild man, but like inside, like he really is like a geeky guy who, and I guess a bit of a perfectionist that just wants to fucking dominate, which, I mean, holy shit, dude. I mean, this is going to be the type of thing this year in particular, maybe, where, you know, like when we had Maddux, Glavine, Smoltz, Maddux wasn't always the best pitcher, like in 96. Like, I think Smoltz had the best year. That was the year that Smoltz won the...
Yeah. But I think they did have 7 Cy Youngs in a row for the Braves. It wasn't always the same guy, right?
91 was Glavine. 92 was Maddux in Chicago.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so it split it up. But technically, it was those three guys for 7 years.
Yes.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. But, man, yeah, I mean, that's just so fucking exciting. So I'm interested to see. So keep an eye on that. If you're a Braves fan, you're listening to the show, I suppose you are. On Strider... changing speeds on his fastball, because that really struck me. Because, I mean, I saw that in, like, the third inning. I was like, he's obviously not fucking tired. So that's exciting. That's interesting. The slider, I don't think much has changed aside from just usage, right? He's just using it more. And potentially, have you seen him using it more, like, early in counts? I haven't really noticed.
You know, I'd have to go back and look. I was so caught up in just how dominant he was. I wasn't really paying attention to the pitch mix. But it is something that you see veteran pitchers do third time through the lineup. They'll start pitching backwards a lot.
Yeah.
And it depends on the hitter, too. Like, Soler looked lost on that slider all night. And I think he has the best bat speed in all of baseball, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean,
I'm pretty sure he's got the highest bat speed. So it's like, I can get a fastball by him, but, you know, probably just throw that slider, because if he makes contact, somebody's gonna die.
Yeah, I say Soler connects with a Strider fastball.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
I would take that if we're already up like 8-0.
Yeah.
Do you think he still needs a third pitch that he can use more than 4% of the time? Is he gonna develop it? Does it feel like the changeup is the right one? I mean, you've been saying what, forkball or splitter?
I think a forkball or splitter makes more sense. Fastball, slider, changeup. I'm trying to think of a dominant pitcher who's had that particular mix. And I guess Scherzer.
Yeah.
But Smoltz threw fastball, slider, forkball. Mm-hmm. Or it was kind of a splitter, I guess. Yeah. It was less of a forkball, but more of a splitter. But I just think it comes out of the hand the same.
And then falls off the table.
Yeah. I mean, it's like it's essentially a changeup. It's just got more downward break on it. I think the eye line of the fastball versus the forkball works a little bit better than the changeup. That's just my opinion.
When velocity is the key, because obviously Maddux and Glavine threw fastballs most of the time, but velocity was not.
And it is interesting. I don't think he's very comfortable with that changeup, because it's quite a bit slower than you would expect. It's like 84, right? 84 to 86, and you would expect it to be 88 to 90 based on how fast he throws the ball. Like a guy, it's usually about an 8 to 10 mile per hour difference, and not 15 or whatever the fuck,
right.
or 14, I guess. And I don't know what the average speed of his changeup is, but the times that I'm paying attention, it's usually around 84. That seems wrong to me.
You know, like, I mean? How could it be that? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's just it isn't the same arm action is what it makes me think, which is going to, like, maybe you can get away with that for a while, but I don't care how fast you throw. If you're tipping, Major League Baseball hitters are going to figure it out at some point, and that it essentially makes that pitch useless anyways.
Right.
But, you know, again, he's still young. He's still working on that. Maybe it works out for him at some point.
Yeah. I mean, and Rick Kranitz has been great with working with the young pitchers. So I'm excited to see that. Real quick, by the way, I noticed last night, because you mentioned before the show started, that Charlie Morton's having, like, maybe his best professional season ever so far, which is hilarious. But, man, that guy's still got velocity himself.
Yeah, he's pretty effortlessly throwing in the mid to high 90s.
Yeah. I think I saw like a 96 or a 98 last night at some point. It was just like, God damn, Charlie.
Yeah, it's interesting. He hasn't had any major injuries lately, so he hasn't like cleaned up. He hasn't had TJ or anything, right?
No, I think his last injury was in the World Series with his leg. Yeah. And I wonder if that affected him last year at all.
Maybe. I mean, it's his landing leg, right?
I think
plant
so, yeah.
leg. So, yeah, that's going to affect you because that, in your pitching mechanics, that essentially acts like a fulcrum. And not only transitions the energy from your backside to your front side as you're throwing, it also takes some of the strain off of your arm.
Yeah.
I think, and that's probably why you saw a little bit of dip in velocity because you can feel it and you start holding back a little bit.
Yeah.
Probably also why he couldn't find a good release point for his curveball last year. Hasn't had that much of an issue with it this year.
No, oddly I mean, enough. Yeah, relatively small sample size, but he's looked like the exact Charlie Morton you'd want. Maybe still a little expensive.
Yeah, but I mean that's the economics of baseball, right? To be honest, you're not going to get a guy like that that's got World Series experience for three different teams and not pay for him.
Right.
Just the way it is.
Is what it is. Mm-hmm. And it's a 1 year deal, I think, right?
Yeah, they're
20 million 1 year.
Yeah, it's all 1 year deals.
So, whatever. Next up we have another strikeout leader for the Braves. Unfortunately, Matt Olson, I believe, is leading the league in strikeouts right now.
He was the last time I checked.
He's
on pace for 257 right now.
Yeah. He's striking out 34.5% of the time. He is currently hitting in the two hole. This is about 10% higher than last year's rate. Is this a problem for the two hole hitter? Do you have a problem? Because he also, his on base percentage is still 380.
No, I don't think so. I mean, he's driving in runs at a very high rate. In a prototypical lineup, you would definitely want a guy who's going to make contact, hit the ball to the right side of the infield to move that runner around.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Ronald Acuna, and he's just stealing every base right now.
Right.
And he's got 13 steals, and he's been caught twice so far. If he keeps that, it's the negative impact of that is, I think, nullified by Acuna's ability. And I don't think it'll last either. I mean, he's always been a guy that strikes out a lot. That's nothing new.
Yeah, so that's what I mean, it's funny because we talked about it last year when we started watching Matt Olson every day for the first time. And it's like, man, his swing looks so long because he's so kind of lanky, but he does get the bat into the zone. Whereas, like, Freddie always had, you always felt like Freddie had full coverage of the zone because he had a shorter swing. And, but, I mean, yeah, Olson, it's interesting. Like, he is striking out a shit ton, but 382 on base percentage, that's exactly what you want out of your two-hole hitter. That's a great on base percentage. He's hitting 261, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, Olson's not the type of guy you need to hit 310 or anything like that. The WRC plus is at 148, which puts you at elite. I mean, you're an elite hitter at that point. And interestingly, this is the other interesting thing I found. So the strikeout thing, that sucks, I guess, and hopefully that drops. Like I said, his career worst was 31%, but that was in 2020, the COVID year.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Fuck it. Throw that out. That Marcelo Ozuna was a god in 2020, so not necessarily too concerned about that. But his BABIP, his batting average on balls in play right now, 375, which is if he puts the ball bat on the ball, he's hitting 375. So that to me, that's where I wonder if he has more bat on ball in, you know, moving forward, is he just, when he's striking out, is he missing the holes that he now gets because the shift isn't there anymore? Or is it, is he hitting 375 because he's hitting the ball so hard and the strikeouts are just a byproduct of, you know, barreling the ball like that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know. It's hard to tell, to be honest. His strikeout, this is the highest strikeout rate of his career. Also the highest walk rate of his career.
Mm-hmm.
So he's seeing a lot of pitches, I guess. His exit velocity is higher this year than it's ever been. Hard hit rate is pretty consistent with his career. Line drive rate is the highest it's ever been. Ground ball rate is the second lowest it's ever been.
So he's elevating the ball quite a bit.
Yeah. So you can't, like, if I look down at this and saw his ground ball rate, like last year his ground ball rate was 39.3%, the year before 40%. If I saw that in the same area, I would think, okay, maybe it's the shift, or maybe he's getting lucky on some hard hit balls that he wasn't getting lucky on before. Baseball's like that.
Yeah.
I think Bull Durham did a bit on that, like one extra dribbler a week.
Right.
You're hitting 300 instead of 250. But his real on base percentage is 398. His isolated power is 283. So it's like these numbers tell me that he's just hitting hard line drives and fly balls.
Okay.
When he makes contact.
Yeah.
And I think if you look at the higher strikeout rate, what he's probably doing is guessing more, not guessing, but making more educated guesses and selling out early on pitches so he can barrel them
mm-hmm.
and hit them hard rather than trying to make weak contact.
One thing I've noticed with him too, and this might explain the walk rate, is he seems to be not – this is anecdotal, so I'd have to look at numbers. But from what I've watched, if he doesn't like the pitch, or if it's not the pitch he was expecting,
mm-hmm.
even if it looks like it's going to be a strike or on the outside corner or whatever, he's not necessarily playing defense with his bat, right? I don't see him trying to foul off a lot.
No.
He's just kind of spitting. He's being like extra selective maybe, yeah. which might lead to extra strikeouts, but it's if that's the case, it's also leading to extra walks. I remember in the 2020 NLCS, I was like ripping my hair out of my fucking head because that's basically what the entire Dodgers team did to us in the back half of that series. They were just like, you know what, man, don't swing at it unless it's like inside a zone inside of the strike zone.
Yeah.
Like they were like, just spit on everything else, because then they'll start to get nervous, they'll start to, you know, try to be too fine and too perfect, and they'll either serve us something up or they'll fucking walk us.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's the type of philosophy Olson has, because like you said, like with the exit velocity and stuff like that, it's, I mean, you're getting the results you want. And I honestly, if part of it too, with a 261 batting average and a 380 on base percentage, okay, you might be leading the league in strikeouts, but that's apparently also the only way you're getting out.
Yeah. I mean, in addition to all that, this is the least amount he's pulled the ball in his entire career by 8 percentage points.
Wow.
So 24% pull, 57.4% center. Interestingly enough, although, you know, he's had some he's been pretty consistent for center throughout his career. It's been 53 last year, 52.5 the year before that. And it's this year it's 24% pull, 57.4% up the middle, and then a career high of 18.5% to the opposite field. It may be the way people are pitching him. Now that the shift is gone, instead of throwing outside changeups and shit that get him to roll over and hit a ground ball to the right side of the infield, which, you know, these days is not the same as it was last year because there's no shift. Maybe they're throwing him more heat outside that he's pushing the other way.
Yeah.
Who knows, right? They don't really account for all the pitch mix here, although I could look into it deeper. I'm not going to do all that. But it is...
You know, live on mic, just...
Yeah.
Just type through it.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody, Fangraphs does track all that shit. So if you're curious about it and you want to go look into it, I would be I'd be thrilled to see that information. But it does seem coincidental that, and we talked about this before the season started, about how pitchers are going to start pitching dudes differently because the shift's not there. Especially guy, like he made more outs in the shift than any other player in Major League Baseball last year. And now it seems like he's traded that for striking out, which means they're throwing him high risk, high reward pitches in different locations now, probably, right?
And that would explain, like I said, I have noticed he's not playing defense in the strike zone on the outside corner, or on the outside in general, right?
No, he's swinging his ass off. If it's a fastball on the outside corner, I haven't seen him take one of those all season.
Yeah.
Like, he's trying to drive that ball to left field. And I think it's because he knows, just like they know, that that's not going to be a changeup anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he rolls it to the right side, his exit velo is like 95. Right? That's his fucking average. So that's probably a hit. Like 40% of the time, that's going to be a hit.
Yeah.
That's pitchers are going to adjust. Hitters are going to adjust. Maybe they make an adjustment midseason and he starts hitting more ground balls. But right now, he's lifting the ball.
Yeah. And so you like him in the two hole. That's fine.
I think that's fine. Yeah. I mean,
because I kind of think so. The other one.
The only other person I would put there is Darno.
Yeah.
If he's in the lineup. I don't think anybody else can hit in that position in this lineup, frankly.
And I'm sure there's some people who used to or maybe remember, like, Albies hitting in the two-hole back in the day. But I think Albies is right at home at six.
Four, five, six is where he belongs.
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't, like, definitely not two.
I love him at six.
Mm. With our current lineup, yeah, it's pretty nice having him there because he's got 23 fucking RBI.
23 RBI at six. And, I mean, it is the type of thing, too. It's just, like, you get through those first five dudes. Obviously, the first four are going to stay the same in Acuna, Olson, Riley, and Murphy. But then, you know, five is probably going to be Darno once he's back. Or, I guess, Acuna, and then Harris slots in at six.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, you just don't get a fucking break.
Like, yeah, I don't know that Acuna. Wait, you mean Ozuna? Acuna.
For what? Acuna to lead off?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's never going to leave there.
No.
Olson, Riley, Murphy. I mean, I don't think you can. The top four.
I would not touch that.
Yeah, I wouldn't fuck with that. I mean, I would probably slot Darno in at fifth when he comes back.
I think he's the ideal guy in the five spot.
Mm-hmm.
And then
he's a guy that can fucking sit on a pitch and hit a home run or a double. He's also a guy who there's no, like, he's not chasing anything. If you throw him low and away, he can punch it through the right side. That's what he's going to do. And then you got your top RBI guy coming up right behind him. You know what I mean? So, again, this is a fucking impossible lineup to pitch to sometimes.
Right. And then 7, 8, 9, once everyone's healthy, you want some combination of Hilliard, Harris, and Arcia.
Arcia or Grissom, yeah. Grissom's hitting the ball. I have been paying attention to him over the past 2 weeks, and it is what we thought. He either fucking crushes the ball, or like his median impact, his median exit velocity is like either 80 or 100.
Yeah.
That's where it is, and that's why it sits in the middle there, and it makes it look like his exit velocity is kind of shitty on average, but it's just because he hits a lot of weak shit, and that's just being selective.
Right.
That's there a number of things I've seen him doing. One is taking good pitches early in the count instead of hitting them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, nobody needs you to walk in the 7-hole, dude. Get out there and fucking hit the ball, which he's gotten better about over the last week. Another thing is he's not a great bad ball hitter.
Yeah.
Like, Austin Riley's got more home runs over the past 3 years on breaking balls than anybody in Major League Baseball. Great breaking ball and bad ball hitter. Grissom hasn't developed that particular skill yet. So, you know,
call that a secondary skill.
Anyway. It is a secondary skill, yeah, and it makes you better as you go along. And one of the things, like, Miguel Cabrera is always he's a freak of nature, but he's always been really good at that, fouling those pitches off and not necessarily put him in play. And maybe that's just something you're born with. Maybe it's Maybelline. Who knows? but Grissom has looked quite a bit better here recently. His defense still sucks. I don't think he can be –
had a couple errors against the Astros.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like – but that kind of stuff happens. Every now and again, you catch a bad hop, or you take her, you try to rush a throw or something, and you take her out of the ball for a second, and it pops out of your mitt. But there's two things that great MLB shortstops have. One is range, and some of it is speed, and some of it is instinct. And he doesn't have either one of those things at shortstop. The other one is the what baseball guys would call the internal clock, right?
Mm-hmm.
You see great shortstops. Like Andrelton Simmons, for example, you see him rush when he needs to and never rush when he doesn't need to. He can feel it. He can feel that base runner going down the line and knows exactly how fast he needs to get to that ball and throw it.
Yeah.
Right. And Grissom just doesn't have that. And I don't know. I assume he's been playing shortstop his entire career, like from high school.
Yeah, I mean, you don't get moved from third to short. Yeah. Right.
So it seems unlikely at this point that he's going to develop that particular skill, frankly. Mm-hmm. I think he would be a great third baseman. Because you don't need that at third base.
Yeah.
I don't know that he would be a great left fielder. He's got a good arm.
Yeah.
Maybe left field is kind of a if you're trying to hide somebody that's right. Just okay, like if you're competent at catching and throwing the ball, mm-hmm. you can play left field. You don't have to be great out there. But I honestly think they may want to look at trading him. And getting some assets out of him. I think he could, his ceiling is like MVP level because he's going to be able to hit so well. But we don't, like Austin Riley signed through 2032.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose if you just want to keep developing him and make him a DH, if you don't think he's that useful anywhere in the.
Yeah, you could. I mean, Darnell's only going to be around for 2 more years probably.
Yeah.
So maybe that, but.
The DH definitely lets you stack positions a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And right now, for some reason, it's catcher for us. Yeah. Good. It's a good situation, but it's hilarious that that's the position we've stacked.
Well, it's hilarious that we have two guys that were all-stars at the position last year on our team, and that one of them is currently leading catchers in every offensive statistic. Like, literally every single one of them. Except for, I think, walks. I think it's the only one he doesn't lead in, and I think that's Real Muto. But and in addition to that, Hilliard has won the right to start every day in left field, in mm-hmm. my opinion. I know that the AJC has been kind of pushing for it. Everybody that writes for them is like, hey, take a look at this guy because he's pretty fucking good.
Right.
And that would give us – man, that might be an historically great defense. Like, I'm trying to think of – I don't know. I'd have to look back through. The Angels had a really good one when they had Edmonds in center, although his range factor wasn't great, but he played really well out there. Defensive run saved was high. Didn't they have Torii Hunter in right field for a couple years after he left the Twins?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
So that might be, and I don't know who they had in left. Wasn't it Darren Erstad or some shit, or was he gone by then? I don't remember.
I don't remember.
But Darren Erstad was quite good as well. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at that, but this would definitely be between Acuna, Harris, and Hilliard. It'd have to be up there, right?
I mean, at one point, I know the Braves were putting Andrew Jones in left in 96 with Marquise Grissom in center, and I think Jermaine Dye in right, which was...
96. Did he get traded after... Wait.
We traded Dye. Like
96 or 95. Was he on that World Series team?
Who?
Jermaine Dye. In 95?
No, he wasn't. But yeah, in like 98, we almost had a great defensive outfield, but Ryan Klesko was in left. But it was Michael Tucker in right and Andrew Jones in center, which were both excellent fielders.
Yeah.
But we just won Klesko's bat.
Well, anyways, Hilliard's definitely won the right. He 992 OPS right now. Makes every play out there, makes some plays he shouldn't make.
He's fast as fuck.
He's got a good arm, too.
Yeah. He's huge. He's like the size of Travis Kelce.
Yeah, he's like 6'5", 240, give or take.
Like, he's a fucking monster. And when he barrels the ball, like, it's... I mean, that home run against Kansas City in particular was fucking
smoke. 458, I believe. Now, here's what I think. I think when everybody's back, Arcia got his cast off yesterday.
Yeah.
So he's swinging in the cage right now. I don't know if he's going to do a rehab assignment. I would assume he's going to do like a game or two. Harris is starting his today mm-hmm. at Gwinnett. So he's going to have probably a 3-game series. And I
believe this will be Harris's first AAA game ever.
Yeah, probably. I don't know that Andrew Jones ever played a AAA game. But yeah, there was some speculation that Harris would be back for this Mets series that's coming up. This weekend, I think. Or, I'm sorry, when is it?
Yeah, it's next.
Yeah, it starts Friday.
Yeah.
Or today, I guess, since we're pre-recording this. But I don't know that he's going to be back that quickly. It may be Saturday or Sunday before he comes back.
No need to rush him.
No. But I really think that they should have Hilliard 7th behind Ozzie double up on that lefty against right-handed pitchers, and then, you know, have right, left, right, and then slot Arcia in eight and move Harris back to nine, because he it makes him think like a leadoff hitter.
Yeah.
That's just the sense I got last year, is that when he's in that position, he's thinking of himself as setting the table for an MVP caliber guy.
Yeah.
And Acuna, and it changes his approach. And the home runs he hits are on accident. They're line drive home runs, and he's still going to hit 20 or 25 of them.
Yeah.
And you're going to, I mean, with that in your nine hole, that would be what I would do. I don't understand why they're moving him up into the lineup like that.
Yeah, I think they expect him to be a 30 homer guy, but I would say, you know, Acuna is a 30-40 homer guy, and you had no problem putting him in the one hole. Just put him where it works, you know. Put him, obviously you can't keep Harris in the nine hole forever, but like he can't be there.
I mean, the biggest problem with it is that he gets less at bats there.
Yes. Yeah. But
because you, I think you get, is it like 25 or maybe it's 40 less at bats per season every time you go down one in the lineup. It's something like that. Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah.
So you go from having, like, I think your leadoff hitter is going to have 750 to 780 plate appearances, and you go down, it's plate appearances, you go down like 40 from there every position in the lineup. Jeez. So, or maybe it's 25, maybe it's less, but either way, you want to have your bet, and he is one of their best hitters, although he got off to a slow start this year. You want to have them at the plate as much as possible, for sure.
But we're just so deep now that whatever, might as well just do it. Real quick, got some sponsors. MyBookie, go to mybookie.com and use the promo code Drinking Bros to double your first deposit up to $1,000. You put in $50, they'll give you an extra $50. Put in $1,000, they'll give you an extra $1,000. It is an incredible deal. Go today, mybookie.com. Use the promo code Drinking Bros. We're betting on baseball. We love betting on baseball. Right?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, you've been win any recently? Or because you do parlays.
I win probably like $100 a day at a minimum.
Okay.
Just because I'm betting so many different things.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I'll bet, I'll probably put up like $400 or $500 in bets a day and be up at least $100 a day, give or take.
It's fun. Betting on baseball is kind of, to me, it's going to be like the new thing.
Yeah, it's just, you know, people didn't do it because they're like, well, it's hard to bet on one individual game. Like, yeah, technically. But then there's 15 of them a day.
Right.
And you've got a pretty good idea every single day. I mean, baseball is pretty chalk as far as that goes. Mm-hmm. There's not over the course of the season, it's about 65% chalk, give or take, right? Yeah. Which means if you can find good patterns between teams, pitchers, matchups, whatever it is, you're like, okay, I'm pretty confident in these four games today. You can get fucking like 38-1 odds on something and put $5 on it. You know what I mean? So I think it's a thinking man's betting game instead of just being like, oh, I think Ohio State's better than Michigan this year.
Which is,
it makes that game fun too. I just think this is a little bit more deep into the weeds. So people who are baseball fans typically are deep into the weeds. You either like it because your dad did and you fucking watch it in the background, or you're like us, autistic as shit, looking at fucking stats as the game's going on. And I think those people like us are probably going to want to gamble.
I would agree. So yeah, mybookie.com, use the promo code Drinking Bros, double your first deposit. Next up, I found something interesting because of, we are familiar with putting products in stadium because Hard AF Seltzer is in the Rays in Tropicana Field and at Lone Depot where the Marlins play. You left out
the Tampa Bay Rowdies.
Oh, yes, and the Rowdies.
So go ahead and jot that down.
Boom. Hit up the Rowdies game. But I found this fun restaurant in Truist that caught my eye because I thought you guys had some problems with
Major League Baseball,
language,
so
appropriateness.
Yeah, so anytime you're gonna put up branding inside of a Major League Baseball facility, I don't know if this is the case for the NBA and NFL. I would imagine it is also the case.
Yeah,
it's not for hockey. They let us do when Black Rifle sponsored the Vegas Golden Knights. They let us do whatever the fuck we want. I don't think anybody cares in hockey. It's very hard to offend a hockey player because they're all like Northern European or Russian,
right,
or Canadian, and they just apologize when they get offended, so nobody cares. But yeah, Major League Baseball didn't want to have our slogan "Stay Hard" on the booze stand.
Yeah,
it's like "Stay Hard." You were okay with "Hard as fuck" but Stay Hard is the one. Stay Hard, like hard, like strong, yeah, like stay, a tough guy. Yeah. It's not about dicks, although we do have dicks everywhere.
Everywhere.
In our logo.
Covered. So fair, sets covered in dicks.
So fair enough. We didn't really push back too much on this one. But this is almost like doubling down on the weird shit that was going on the scoreboard a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Right? The name of this restaurant that has, they have about, I think it's 10 locations in the Atlanta. Oh, no, it's all over the country. Brooklyn, Harlem, Atlanta, mostly.
I think it's those two.
And then Birmingham, Alabama.
Okay.
So, but it's called Slutty Vegan ATL.
Yeah.
And they're, if you go to their website, at the very top of it, there's a banner ad for a fucking cookbook that they put out by someone named Pinky Cole. I don't know if that's somebody I should know, but I don't. The name of the fucking cookbook is Eat Plants, Bitch.
Which I enjoy, to be honest. But
it's, yeah, I mean, if you look, I'm curious now. I think we're going to go to that game on, what is it, the 26th or something, on Friday, the 26th. I'm going to go buy this. I'm obviously not going to buy any vegan food.
Because, honestly, as far as vegan food goes, this looks pretty good.
Look, here's the deal. They're trying to make it look like real food.
Right.
And that's what bothers me. You know what I mean? Nobody has ever tried to take a steak and make it look like a goddamn turnip. That's stupid. No one would even think to do that because a steak is awesome. And that's why they're trying to make it look
right.
like real food. They're shitty food. But I am going to go by for sure and check out their stand just to see what it looks like because this is pretty funny.
I mean, even the names of the food. You got a burger called the Menage a Trois. Chicken sandwich called Chicken Head, which I believe is like Southern / black slang for like a slut.
For a fallacious woman. Yeah. Chicken head, like you're bobbing your head up and down on a penis.
There you go.
There you go.
Hollywood hooker.
One night stand.
Sloppy toppy.
Fussy hussy. Side hoe. H-E-A-U-X, which is a New Orleans style crispy shrimp tossed in buffalo sauce.
Okay.
I mean, if it was real shrimp, I would eat that. If they had real food at this place, I would definitely go there just because they're talking all this shit.
Oh, yeah. And then the one's just called the Super Slut, which they didn't really try too hard on, I feel like.
Yeah. The really interesting part is the children's options available at this place that has...
What? Wait, I didn't see that.
Eat Plants Kids. And then Eat Plants Kids Chicken, C-H-I-K apostrophe N tenders, which is obviously, you know, like fruit spelled F-R-O-O-T, and then in quotation marks. I think Futurama did that bit back in the day. But yeah, Sloppy Toppy is one of them, which is another.
Is that just like a top who's real drunk?
No, a sloppy toppy is code for a sloppy blowjob.
Oh, okay.
Like you're getting topped off by some whore.
All right.
This is a sports show, folks. Not a family show, though, apparently.
No.
And apparently, Truist Park is not a family establishment either because they've got some crazy shit going on here. But this reminds me of that. Have you ever been to that place in Vegas, X-Slut?
No.
It's, God, where the fuck is it? I can't remember which hotel it's in. But it's like a breakfast brunch place. It's really good.
Yeah.
But it's just like, it's in Vegas in a hotel. You can do that there. This is a fucking baseball stadium. Right. Seems odd to me. After the pushback we got for Stay Hard,
right.
This seems kind of weird to me.
But is what it is, I suppose. And then real quick before we get out of here, just want to get your thoughts on just the standings in general so far. There are a couple random teams at the top. The Pirates are tied with the Braves for the best record in the NL. I think they said something like the three of the lowest payrolls in baseball right now have like four or five of the best records. A's obviously are still terrible. But
that's not a real team.
No. Do you see anything interesting? Dan Regester Delco was asking me about the Pirates the other day, and I was like, they're not.
Well, they've played there. Cincinnati, Boston.
I went through their schedule. Yeah, it's pretty weak.
Houston, who's been banged up all year.
They swept the Rockies.
They played Cincinnati again. Last night, they got fucking beat late by the Dodgers. I don't expect they'll win any of these games. They're going up against Gonsolin tonight. He's tough. And then Urias the following night. But then they go back and play at Washington. So
that'll be fun.
I mean, they're probably going to stay in there for a little while. And they also just signed, what's his nuts? Brian Reynolds. Is that his name?
Yeah. So now there's only three teams in baseball history that have not signed a player to a $100 million or more dollar contract.
But this is an average. So Brian Reynolds is an all-star. He's a 25 home run guy. He's going to get on base at like a 350 clip. at a minimum throughout his career, or at least since he's been starting regularly. And they signed him to a $13 million average annual value. Mm-hmm. That's a deal you sign knowing that you're going to trade this dude at some point, right?
Yeah.
Like, you don't – he could have – and I think they probably told him that, frankly, because otherwise, why the fuck would he sign that deal? I would not have signed that deal. For 8 years?
Yeah.
$106 million?
You want to stay in Pittsburgh for a year? They're winning right now, but I mean, they have some nice pieces on the field, but there's nothing in the rotation.
No. I mean, they've got Cabrian Hayes, who is pretty good. But their DH is Kutch. He's going to be gone after this year, probably.
Yeah.
That Ji-Hwan Bae guy is supposed to be pretty good. He's kind of off to a slow start this year, but it's... you know, it's Major League Baseball. It takes time to adjust. He's 23.
Yeah, and they're an interesting team. Hopefully that their owner actually gives a shit. The two teams I'm excited about actually being potentially competent are the Rangers.
The Rangers, for sure, just because the West has been dominated by Houston for so long.
Yeah.
Just to have them have to fucking put some effort forth.
Yeah.
Throughout the season, because the Angels suck.
Well, the Angels are at least, it's early, very early, but the Angels are treading water.
They're 500, and that's as good as they're going to be.
Well, they're only 2.5 back
because
it's early.
So it is early, yeah.
That at least, it's like, all right, man, like, come on, be at least in a pennant race. You know what I mean? Like, be at least, have Shohei Ohtani take meaningful at-bats in a regular season.
That would be nice. Now, on the other side of that coin, Oakland is 5-19. We're 24 games in, and their run differential is -104, which means they're losing games by an average of 4.3 runs a game.
It's insane.
Even that's including their wins, by the way.
Yeah.
God damn it, dude. Even Rob Manfred now is in the media saying, Vegas is going to be quite a bit better for these guys. And, you know, it is what it is. The city of Oakland has done absolutely nothing to fucking help this team.
Oh, you want to know a fun fact I read the other day about the A's owners?
Mm.
The dude who bought the Warriors was gonna buy the A's. Mm-hmm. Bud Selig came in at the last minute, stopped that sale, just said no, which I guess is a thing. Just said no, not him, and then made it so that the A's sold to his University of Wisconsin fraternity brother, who is their current owner.
Well, he butt fucked that organization.
Yep,
for decades. I really think that. All professional sports, but particularly baseball, because this is the one that's most problematic. Like, there are teams like the Browns who had a rough run for a while, but they were just making stupid draft picks. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like Johnny Manziel, are you fucking kidding me? At number one?
Right.
Get out of here. But there are teams in baseball that aren't even trying to be competitive.
Yeah.
Frankly, the Pirates being competitive this year is out of the ordinary, to say the least, right? I think there should be some rule where the owners can, and I don't know if they would even do this because they want to beat up on the A's and the Pirates,
right.
You know what I mean? But there should be some rule where be like, hey, you're not pulling your fucking weight.
Yeah,
you're out.
You need to show that you're trying to be competitive. Like, it's one thing to not win.
I think it's bad for the brand.
Yeah, but you need to be showing that you're competitive. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And the only reason the A's would potentially fulfill that is because Billy Bean is such a good general manager that he's dragged them into the playoffs in the past. But that's all I got for today. I know you got another show coming up in a minute.
Yep.
So for Dan Holloway, I'm Rob Fox. Go Braves.